It is now well known that planting new churches and campuses is the most effective way of reaching the lost. And launching in rented venues like schools or theaters is one of the most cost-effective ways to launch a new church. If you are planning a launch or are trying to figure out how to do church well in rented venues, we encourage you to check out our friends at Portable Church. The team at Portable Church Industries takes your vision and creates engaging environments that keep volunteer retention high and allow more energy to be spent on ministry. Go to portablechurch.com/Lifeway to learn more and find free customized resources that teach how to launch Portable and Strong.
Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Another episode of the Group Answers Podcast. I'm Brian Daniel. As always, always with Chris Surratt.
I think I've only missed one or two.
I don't remember those.
I think you've missed maybe two or three.
I know I missed episode number 100. That's all I know.
Oh, that's true.
I know.
That was a good one.
And we are joined today by Executive Pastor at Church of the City in Franklin, Tennessee, Jonathan Pitts. Welcome to the Group Answers Show, Jonathan.
I'm glad to be on. I'm surprised you guys invited a, you know, regular dude like me onto this awesome show. How many episodes have you done?
A regular dude. This is 143.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
When we went to a weekly, that number really started getting big.
Yeah.
Well, I said before we went on air, it's true that when we got you as a guest, we knew we had to get the cameras.
That is true.
Brian and I both have faces for podcast.
That's true.
And we knew that you
had... Wait a minute. I'm totally kidding.
You guys are good looking guys. It's all good. We own it. We own it. But we knew that you had a face for video, so we brought in the cameras.
Oh, man. Nah.
Well, just by way of an official intro, prior to pastoring, Jonathan was executive director at the Urban Alternative, the national ministry of the Dr. Tony Evans in Dallas, Texas.
I like that. The Dr. Tony Evans. He is the Dr. Tony Evans.
Jonathan now lives in Franklin, Tennessee with his four daughters, recently transitioned. It's been less than 2 years. I think you said closer to 19 months since making that transition from Dallas to Nashville.
Yeah, it's been the craziest 19 months of my life. But we came here for this role specifically. And, you know, it's been quite a story, which I think we'll get into. But it's been a beautiful time at Church of the City. And they are my family. And I'm grateful for the community that I get to pastor in. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Church of the City, because I don't think we've had anybody on the podcast from Church of the City.
Pretty sure, no.
Yeah, so Church of the City is, it's a crazy story, but 7 years ago, a guy named Darren Whitehead, Australian guy, if you've never heard him talk, decided to plant a church here. He actually pastored at, he was a youth pastor at the People's Church many years ago, and went to Chicago, was a part of Willow for some time, and then just felt God calling him to pastor. So 7 years ago, he planted a church in his living room called Church of the City, and actually planted two churches at the same time. So Franklin, and then also a church in East Nashville, same day, same Sunday, kind of crazy. And what would happen is they'd start growing fairly quickly and would eventually, 2 years into that story, merge with the People's Church would merge with Church of the City. And so it's actually one of the more successful church merger stories, I think. And it's a lot to it, a lot to unpack. But right now we have five different congregations across the state, well, state of Tennessee, in the Nashville area. What do we call this? Middle Tennessee, where we're at. And two, what I would call sister churches in New York City, pastored by John Tyson, which are part of our story as well. So it's really beautiful. It's a pretty young congregation. We're learning as we go, and God's been really gracious. And I'm just glad to be a part of the story. I'd never thought for a second I would leave Dallas, and here I am. And God's growing me, and I feel like He's using me. And, you know, the church, honestly, the first thing they did for me, they became a part of my healing story, and I would start contributing. And now, like, every day is still healing, but I'm contributing a ton at the same time, so.
So the movie Kingdom Men Rising released a little bit less than a year ago, and you were a big part of that. but you've referred to this a couple of times, the healing journey and the transition from Dallas to Nashville, Middle Tennessee. Now would be a good time, if you don't mind, Jonathan, just sharing that story and the circumstances that contributed and continue to contribute to this ministry at the Church of the City.
Yeah, well, it's kind of crazy. God literally, I just look backwards and I see so much his faithfulness, and I see just his sovereign hand. I met my wife Winter in college and wanted to go into sales, wanted to make a lot of money. And bottom line is I started in a sales track in pharmaceutical sales, married my wife Winter. And like a few months later, my company downsized and we went to Dallas to visit one of her uncles who happened to be a guy named Tony Evans. And God would literally destroy my plans and start his, because within a few months of that, we were on our way to Texas, moving to Texas, and I would actually start in ministry, and I'd manage Anthony Evans for 7 years. That would lead to me building trust with Tony Evans, and building trust with him, I'd end up running his national ministry for 7 years as the executive director. The first executive director passed Lois, his wife, who basically founded the ministry with him, and would do 4 years as a director of membership there. And my wife and I would do ministry and family for 14 years with the Evans. I always said I was close enough to be trusted, far enough away to be fired. So they had me in a pretty critical position. But, we just felt like God was calling us away, and Winter was a really big part of that. And long story short, after 14 years, we made a decision to come to Nashville, join the Church of the City story, which is a whole nother story. And Winter was my biggest advocate in that. She believed that God had more for me as a leader, and that God wanted to grow me as a pastor. And so we made this move to Tennessee on July 10th, 2018, went back to Dallas for me to finish up my last week of work on about 4 days later, July 14th. We actually went on vacation for a week and then went back to Dallas. And Winter, my wife of 15 years and 27 days at that point, and the mother of my four girls, would quickly, tragically pass away of a heart, they called it cardiac dysrhythmia, really, really suddenly. And it was the hardest day of my life. I talk about it a lot now, so it's regular for me to talk about, but it wrecked my world, changed my life. And what's crazy about that is, there's a lot that's crazy about that, but we had already bought a home in Nashville, and remember Darren called me and said, hey, if you want to stay in Dallas, you know, I was in a trusted place with the Evanses and all that. And he said, if you want to stay in Dallas, we understand. We'll help you sell your house. We'll pack your stuff up. But if you want to come to Nashville, there's a church family that's here that's ready to adopt you. And what's crazy is that same day, my daughter, my oldest daughter, Alina, took me on a walk. She said, Daddy, can we walk? I took a walk with her and she said, are we still going to Nashville? And I said, well, we need to pray about it and see if this is the right thing, take our time. And she said, Daddy, I feel like we're supposed to go to Nashville. Mommy was more excited about Nashville than anybody. I feel like we're supposed to go. And bottom line is, I didn't ask for a fleece blanket. God basically gave me one through Darren and through my daughter. And so we kept coming, and obviously have gone through a lot of healing. One of the biggest healings for me has been able to continue to honor my wife. She had a ministry called For Girls Like You that I continue to run and be a part of, and God's blessed that and is growing in that. And she continues to live, even though she's not living here on earth, both eternally, but also through her work. And so the church and my girls, my wife's ministry have been all a part of my healing journey. And that's where I find myself now. Yeah. And it's wonderful and a lot of fun.
I know that Church of the City emphasizes community in a big way. I mean, I remember when it was planted in Nashville, that was the idea around the model, was that it would be in communities. Mm-hmm. It would be a community local church, not this big mega church, which it's amazing what God does. He took that little plan and blew it up, and now it's just going like crazy. But obviously community is a big part. Small groups are a big part. Talk a little bit about that and how community has affected, you know, your story. And kind of brought you to where you are today through all of it.
Sure. It's funny because I came into the church already merged. The Franklin Church already merged with this big this bigger church. And I came into a mega church, essentially. But I came in knowing that their heart was always smaller communities, neighborhood churches. And, you know, they didn't have a plan for what happens if this thing blows up. And so the goal was always neighborhood churches, more neighborhood churches. And that kind of interrupted the story. And we see God all over the place in that. But that really is what that's led to, is us having two strategies at the same time. One is this neighborhood church model. We have a couple of smaller neighborhood churches that still have groups within them, but, you know, the large majority of those congregants know each other at some level, and, you know, they know their groups better. But then we have the church in Franklin, which is, you know, we have 5,000 people on a weekend. So we had to figure out, what does it look like to do community well? What does it look like to do care well? What does it look like to do the gospel well in the context that really all the guys that planted the church were at some level trying to get away from? You know, they were all in mega church environments, like just dreaming about what it would look like to just do life in small communities, and God would kind of sort of sabotage that plan in a way. And we still are doing that in a way. So we had to figure out, what does that look like to scale this? And I remember, I'll never forget being with Darren, probably one of my first months, and him just receiving all this pastoral care requests, different requests for pastoral care, and feeling completely overwhelmed by the fact that I cannot do this. Everyone needs me to be their pastor, and I can't do this on my own. And so what we had to do was figure out, and what's been beautiful is looking back, you know, almost probably 16 months now at a new strategy we implemented, and watching it work and watching it scale in a way that we dreamed about and talked about, and, you know, had to put a plan into action, and now we're doing it. So, you want me to talk about what that looks like? Or?
Yeah, I'd love to hear kind of how care works. Does that work through groups? Is, you know, how do people get cared for at Church of the City?
Yeah, so obviously we all had backgrounds with community groups, but we're trying to figure out, how do you do this well in a way that scales with the church, but also gives those groups like real tangible access to vocational pastors that we felt like were necessary. And so one of the things we did early on, I came from, you know, pharmaceutical background, kind of worked in that industry for about a year and a half, and everything is done by area. You have, you know, regional managers and area managers, and you know, you have basically salespeople that are under those leaders. And so I actually came up with the idea of, like, what if we were to kind of create an area model, like a distribution model that has pastors, vocational pastors that are over different areas. And I'm sure this isn't new within church world. I'm sure churches have done it before, but from my mind, I brought it from my farmer world experience. And so we basically split Franklin up in four sections, north, south, east, and west, really easy. We're in the process of hiring our third and fourth area pastor. We have two area pastors now that basically those area pastors are a part of what's called our community life infrastructure. Community life has pastoral care in it, has our group structure in it, also has some other things, men's ministry, different things that are inside of that, because we want to make sure that we're making smaller community within this 5,000 person church right now, or 5,000 people showing up, a Sunday environment. And so what we want to do is have those pastors really be responsible for the care of those different areas. And right now we have about, I think the number, the last I heard, is about 180 groups that we have. And that's growing fast as our church continues to grow. Mm-hmm. But ultimately the goal is that those area pastors become that, like that care pastor. And that pastor that's doing life with them, that's mm-hmm. marrying their kids, that's doing funerals, that's doing counseling, that's running kind of men's ministry stuff within their area, and that we're obviously doing it as a body of believers together, all, you know, 5,000, whatever the number is, but that the people within those different areas know each other really well, because we're scaling it in a way that allows them to get to know each other really well. So in a nutshell, that's what it is.
So that care pastor is basically on staff, paid, correct?
Yes.
How do they equip then the community group leaders? Do they work, are they kind of coaches for the community group leaders? And if there's a care issue, they can step in and help, or do they give training? How does that work?
Yeah, their number one job right now is to literally be, because it's so new, but it's getting to know their community group leaders. We believe that the heartbeat of our church is going to be those leaders, those community group leaders. And so we're just pouring into them, investing in them with meetings, with trainings, and really trying to build into them. And, you know, like, you know, you have, you know, in our church right now, we're not calling them deacon or deaconess, but like the bottom line is, like, they are the leaders in our church that are carrying a large portion of caring for people and investing in people. And so we're trying to invest into our community group leaders at a significant level. And right now the area pastor is really responsible for getting to know those leaders, pouring into them, and honestly dealing with all the issues that you're going to deal with when you have humans running things within your church. And so it's really beautiful, because we're empowering them to be local pastors. I mean, they're not lesser than pastors. They are pastors that are pastoring among our congregation, and they're probably the I'll stop short of saying they're the most important part of the church, but they are a very important part of us doing community really well. Yeah. So,
what kind of reaction are you getting from the groups themselves? I mean, are you seeing greater assimilation? Are you seeing greater, what you, however way you guys define it, spiritual growth or spiritual health? Are you seeing more involvement or more missionality? I mean, what kinds of, how are you guys at the church? Are you measuring these kinds of things? And what kind of, I mean, it's, we're still early in this, but what kinds of trends are you picking up on?
Yeah, you know what's funny is the thing we realized would happen, and we had to prepare ourselves for this mentally, is that we would actually be, the first thing that would happen is we would be discovering how much greater the need is than we actually know about. Because when you have, you know, less people caring for people, there's a lot of issues that can tend to get buried or to get ignored. And so we knew that it would start, like, things would start bubbling to the surface, marriage issues, issues with kids, like all those different things. And so what's really been neat is, you know, most of the stories that are pouring in now are stories of people that are caring for people that are in deep pain. And so they're not the most attractive stories in the sense that, you know, it's not about, it's not necessarily about growth at this point as much as it is about caring for each other. And so we're in the process now of pulling those stories together and sharing those with our staff to motivate our staff. And we're also creating, we're trying to create simple metrics. I think churches can tend to get wrapped up and organizations can tend to get wrapped up in lots of different metrics and they're measuring everything, but nothing really matters. And so we want to really measure what's really important. And so we're in the process of creating what are those metrics for us that we want to be, you know, obviously there's always like how many groups do we have and, you know, how many people are like actually engaged in those groups and the basic things you measure. But what does health look like for us? I'm going to say that frankly, we're still in the process of figuring out what does that look like. But we are seeing like signs of health anecdotally and people being cared for and people being loved and issues coming to the church that need to be dealt with that wouldn't have come otherwise because, you know, it's just there's not the right level of access. And so I knew it would get a little bit harder before it would get better. And we're in that phase, but it's beautiful. It really is.
I love the fact that they're not giving in to the typical metrics, though, and really wrestling with the question on how are we going to measure this, especially because the first order of groups is care.
Yeah.
I mean, well, I don't know if that's first, but it's certainly a part of that triumvirate of things that are very important,
right.
And that's the hardest one to measure.
And you have
so the fact that you're okay in that tension and not really knowing that right away and letting that evolve is a very healthy thing.
You have
not easy though.
Hard numbers like you talked about that is the easiest to get to. You know, how many are showing up, how many signed up, all of that. Then you have the soft numbers, which is how many lives are being changed, are they growing in their walk with Christ, and that's just hard to get to.
Yeah,
that's hard, you know, whether you do it through a survey or you do it through stories or whatever that looks like, it's just hard to get to. So I love that you guys are being intentional on trying to grab those metrics from group leaders.
And we're trying to live in the tension of like having hard numbers, but also leaving room for like story is one of the best things that you can actually capture. And you can't get everybody's story, but it's a valuable thing to have. And so, you know, we're trying to not be lazy on either side. Like we don't want to be lazy to the hard metrics that you can measure that tell you a story, but we also don't want to be lazy to actually capturing the stories that tell you a story because both matter. And so, you know, we're still learning, but it's honestly a lot of fun. We've got a great team, a great couple pastors that are kind of leaning in and a team that we're growing to really do this well. Like I'm probably the least important part to it. So, you know, really grateful for the people that are around me that are actually carrying the weight of this.
I'm curious about, you guys are multi-site, which you talked about, and there's a lot of different types of multi-sites that are out there. There are some that are identical, and they'll have the preaching by video or something like that. You guys have a different model where you have live teaching at every campus. They're a little more autonomous, you know, that kind of a deal. How does this work across all of the campuses when it comes to, you know, when you're rolling something out like this, is it up to each campus pastor to kind of figure out how that works and best in their context? Or is it, you know, let's all try this and see how it goes.
Yeah. So we'd actually say we're a little bit more multi-congregational than we are multi-site. And if you're on the spectrum of, you know, multi-site is going to be a lot more control. Multi-congregation is going to be a lot more autonomous. Multi-site is going to likely be more video venue. Multi-congregational will be more like live teaching and pastors locally. So honestly, like we're trying to figure it out. Like so much has changed in the time, even since I've been there. And one of the things that we defined this year is that we do want to get a little bit closer to multi-congregational because we do want to have some level of consistency across all of our churches. And so when it comes to care, when it comes to groups, frankly, what it looks like right now is it's a little bit different for the Franklin big church than it does the to the other neighborhood churches, East Nashville, Sylvan Park, Spring Hill, because we are so much larger. And so they don't have the area pastor model because they're still in a place where the pastors that they have can still manage the number of groups they have. They still have groups. Our group values, like everything else is still the same when it comes to how we do group life, how we see our groups. But the infrastructure for managing that is much different because the scale is just so much bigger. So, but we are still trying to figure it out. I mean, our team, our lead pastor's team, our pastors from each of our churches meet on a weekly basis. We talk about this. Our executive team meets and we talk about this. And we gather executive team and our lead pastor's team together to talk about this together. And honestly, like we're trying to...
For the listeners, his mic is falling. Okay.
Honestly, we're still trying to figure it out. But that starts with communication. And, you know, we say that we're a family of churches, that Church of the City is a family of churches, living in the way of Jesus for the renewal of our city. And so to be a family of churches means having family meetings and having family conversations and dealing with things that might not be working in one place that work in another. And so it's all the other neighborhood churches do it the same in the sense that our group, we have a group infrastructure that's the same, that has the same values, but the distribution of that is definitely a lot different at Franklin, which is the, you know, the mega church.
Right.
So, although our Spring Hill church is growing really, really fast too, so they're going to be running into some of the same challenges that we are sooner than later if Spring Hill doesn't stop growing, which it doesn't look like it
is. That area is just exploding where Spring Hill is. So, yeah, that's great.
So, just for clarity, so you've got five campuses in the Nashville area, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're north, south, east, west, and you've got the area pastors. But those areas encompass all five campuses are a part of that. So, like, each campus does not have a north, south, east, west, right?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Only Franklin has a north, south, east, west. All the other churches, you know, have enough pastors to kind of do coverage of their whole area. What's interesting, we looked at a map, like a heat map kind of deal, on Sunday for our, showed our congregants where our groups are. And our groups really span a large portion of Nashville that actually kind of bleed into where our other churches are. So one of the other things that we'll deal with is what does it look like to, you know, when you think, I mean, just think about like future planting. I mean, think about, you know, if we have groups in an area that, you know, we have groups that are close to downtown and our East Nashville church is much closer to that. And so is our Sylvan Park church. Like, you know, we haven't even thought about like, what does that mean for those groups to be so close to those other churches and not, and they come to Franklin, but their groups are closer to the other churches. So, yeah, there's lots of stuff we haven't figured out yet and questions to be asked about that. But yeah, only Franklin has the kind of north, south, east, west distribution.
Man, Chris, we talk about intentionality a lot on the show and that's the most important thing. But if we both read The Trellis and the Vine, it sounds like Jonathan and his team are more, if you can pull it off, that's the way to do it. It feels more organic.
Yeah.
It feels like you've got a nice balance of centralization and decentralization. But of course, the downside of that is it's maybe a little day to day, like you said. It's going to continue to evolve and you don't know. But if you trust, you've got good leadership and good vision, really, and everyone's bought in, that can really work.
Yeah, honestly, the thing I love about being on our team is we have a really entrepreneurial spirit, which means we adapt really fast, which also means you can stress staff out when you adapt really fast. But ultimately, it's a part of our culture. Like, there's no doubt. I mean, it's not one of our core values, but the minute I got there, I realized, oh, wow, like, we're a very entrepreneurial church. And so we change fast. When we see something not working, we're like, all right, we're going to change that, you know? And so it's it can definitely be stressful and something that needs to be managed. But ultimately, it's we almost operate like a church plant that's no longer a church plant. And I think it's for the right reasons. And, you know, I mean, some things we're having to get more systematized in. We want to have consistency. But having like an entrepreneurial spirit, I think, is going to aid us well, even as we grow and age. So,
Andy Stanley talks about tensions to manage. And I think multi-site creates so many tensions to manage that it's always going to be there. I mean, communication is harder. You know, who answers to who is harder and all of those things. Cracks at, you know, at one site become gaps when you multiply, you know, it becomes bigger. But there's always going to be those tensions to manage. And I think the way that you guys kind of leaning on those campus pastors to know the context that they're in, their communities, I think that helps, you know, some of that, that they're informing the mega church. This is what's going on in my community.
Yeah. And honestly, like what I've said this probably a couple times, what I love about our church. Another thing I do love is that like that group of lead pastors are real friends. Like there's real friendship there. And that is so necessary when you're dealing with complexities and financial complexities and, you know, the tensions that need to be managed, like having real friendship and trust is a big deal. And I'm grateful for that. Yeah.
How are you guys handling like development, leadership development and the inevitable turnover and getting people ready to step into different roles?
Yeah, our hope right now is that we're going to begin to build a leadership pipeline that we probably don't have. I mean, we're a big church. We've grown really fast and we've not had time to think about a leadership pipeline. And so we've actually changed some things structurally to create a development program that begin investing in the staff that we obviously see like leadership ability in so they can grow as leaders and then and building a pipeline of people that come up underneath of them to obviously eventually take over those roles when those people roll off to go somewhere else. Because if they're talented, there's going to be a time when you're going to be replacing some of them. So that's another thing we're working out. Again, that's a process as well. So
one last question. You've mentioned or referenced men's ministry a couple of times or men's discipleship. I've already mentioned it, a significant part of the storyline of Kingdom Men Rising that was released last spring, which was a success. I know you were at the premiere, but I don't know if you and I have really talked about that since then.
No. I mean, it seemed like it was successful to me. I mean, yeah. You guys were no better than I was.
Yeah. It was
a joy and an honor to be a part of it, that's for sure.
So how would you encourage men to offer community and create community? I know that's something a lot of churches wrestle with and even struggle with. And it seems like to me, and Chris and I have talked about this, men's ministry is relegated to like 3:30 a.m. on Thursday morning, and that's it. And that's an exaggeration, but it feels like it. Chris, it feels like 3:30.
It's pretty close.
So, I mean, have you guys made any headway on that, or do you feel like you've learned anything, you know, since you've been on staff there just about men and community and men's discipleship?
You know, what's funny is I just got an email from one of our congregants today asking about men's ministry and where we are on it, because one of the things that we knew we would need to do to implement this group strategy is really put everything else on the back burner. Mm. And I don't mean to say it so crass, but it was true. And so we had our men's ministry at the time had created like these new, almost like these huddles of like fire pits and axe throwing and all that. And what's really cool about that is my men's group or my community group, my own community group is made up of five families right now. Two of them are brothers I met at this men's event that we did, where we just literally huddled up for men. We did it like four times where we did fire pits and axe throwing and food. And so my group formed out of that. But when we implemented our group strategy and we were actually rearranging staff at the very same time, we had to kind of set that aside. So I actually got an email today from a congregant saying, hey, I've got a small group of guys. It's five of us right now. We want to figure out how can we invest in our men's ministry. And I'm having to say, hey, it's coming, like probably Q3 of this year, we're kind of creating an emphasis for that. But yeah, we don't have that figured out yet either. But what's really cool is if you just get guys together, it doesn't really take all that much. Like we're not needy. Like we just need to gather together. I mean, we have these fire pits, and that guy that emailed me also met all of those guys in his group at those fire pits as well. And so we're trying to figure out what does it look like to be intentional without making it, you know, like most men's ministries go to just events. Like they've got one big event a year or two big events a year. We're trying to figure out how do we build long-term sustainable relationships for these men where it's not like I come in once a year and I tell you I'm struggling with pornography, I'm struggling with my marriage, I'm struggling with this, but like how do I get into small groups of men that are literally holding me accountable to the things that I need to be growing in and that I'm holding accountable as well. And so we've actually used the term triads, like trying to get men into triads. Like what does it look like to get them into triads? Like three guys together, holding each other accountable. We're in the beginning of trying to figure out what that looks like because it was something that we had to say. If we don't have health for all of our community, like it doesn't matter if we have health for our men, we need health for our communities. And more than anything, getting our men leading in their groups and their families is that's most important. And so we actually thought the men's ministry was kind of secondary to that. And not to say it's lesser than, but it was like secondary to just building health within our church. And so, yeah, that's kind of where we're at right now. So, sorry to disappoint you. I'm like, I wish I had like this great answer.
Somebody's going to figure it out someday and they're going to write a book and it's going to sell like a gazillion copies.
Yeah, the thing I would say, and this is for me personally right now, like men's ministry starts one man at a time. Like I'm in a Bible study that I do every Tuesday morning and it's literally like 20 guys at a time. Sometimes it's 10 just reading scripture together. Right now we're in Revelation. Like talk about like, you know, intimidating content just to dive into. But there was a guy that I met with from our church that, was kind of, I guess you'd say he's deconstructing his faith. And, anyway, he was just like, man, I'm not reading the Bible. And I was like, God just kind of prompted me to just engage with him in scripture. And so like, I don't have the time, but I'm going to try to find the time to read scripture with that guy, like one-on-one, and God's going to use that. And so it always gets back to the one-on-one relationship. I can't stress the importance of that.
That's anymore. Actually, I think, I mean, I know you're kidding, Chris, but I actually think that's really insightful. It's true. It doesn't take much to get guys together. And in fact, the more, I don't know how to articulate it. I'm not going to try and measure the words, but sometimes the harder you try, the harder you make it.
Yeah.
When really it's just about getting some guys together around the Bible, give them some questions. And I think guys know what you're trying to do and they can take it from there.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's kind of a low maintenance proposition.
Yeah. Coming around where guys are already gathering. I love that you guys, you know, you have a big event, but the idea is to get them into community outside of that. So where they, you know, they'll gather around axe throwing or they'll gather around whatever it is, but let's have the goal of it to get them into community for discipleship.
Yeah. And oh, by the way, like we actually believe that those men being in community in those triads within their small groups is best. So they're already doing family together. Like let's not create different groups of men than the community group. So for us, it's going to exist within the community group structure.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's worked for me. I just started a fight club every other Saturday, and I just invited three other guys to come, and I choose the scripture, and we talk about it.
You fight some questions. Too? Like in the basement?
I have. I have.
What's the number one rule?
Number one rule of fight club.
Yeah.
Bring your Bible. It's a different kind of fight club, guys. It's not that.
You don't talk about fight club.
I haven't seen that. Come on, Brian. Well, you're right. I haven't seen that movie. And I guess I ripped off the title, so I guess I should see the movie at some time. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this installment of the Group Answers podcast. Jonathan, thanks for making the drive in. We know the Nashville traffic paradigm is not for the timid, so thanks for braving it for us and coming up here for these few minutes.
I'm praying about my commute home, so...
We'll try to get you on the road as soon as possible.
We would like to thank engineer Chris Surratt for his show and president, executive producer, and producer Joey Jacob, who... is in his tireless effort into making our show work. Appreciate everyone for being with us. We would encourage you to subscribe and rate us. And we love getting the comments, as we always say, wherever you listen to the show. Appreciate you and look forward to being with you again next time.